spread of one guy, then that one person caused this much disruption and worse, lead to our destruction. If the Romans get wind of a potential rebellion, they will come and crush us. Better that one man die than a nation perish. We're in chapter 11 of John at the moment, and that's the closing scene of the chapter. And it says as well, in the John says that Caiaphas didn't realize, because he was high priest, he was actually also prophesying what was going to happen to Jesus. So in one sense, we get then an idea that this is meant to happen. Jesus is meant to be sacrificed for the good, well, we know, not just the nation, but of the entire world. But there's a tension in this. And I'm coming to this first so I can track back to the beginning. It's very easy for us, isn't it, to think that way, to callously calculate the cost-benefit of one person versus many. And to perhaps read this passage and this part of it and think, yes, see, even God affirms that. Except John, he's a clever man and he's a clever writer. And he loves this thing called irony. Irony is when, Caiaphas says this and says, look, and this is obviously God's plan, and yet everything that's led up to that point suggests that's absolutely not the right thing to do. And he's playing with the words, he's playing with the ideas, saying, yes, okay, God's about this. This is not Caiaphas's plan. But if we read the story up to this point, we'd realize, Caiaphas, this is not a good idea. When we go back, we'll see Jesus make the statement, I am the resurrection and the life. One of his great I am statements. I am the resurrection and the life. Now, think of this strategically. What is the one great weapon of the Roman Empire or of any tyranny? The ability to kill their enemies. What is the one great weapon that we have in Christ? The ability not to be killed. Right? The one guy that you would not want to sacrifice is Jesus. Because he is the resurrection and the life. Imagine Caiaphas and the crew saying, you know what? Let's back this guy, Jesus, and confront Rome. And even if we all die in the battle, Jesus will come and resurrect us all. And we'll do it again until we win. Right? That would be, if you were smart, that would be the strategic way of doing this. So John uses this statement, better that one man die for the sake of the nation. Yeah, but he's also already got us to the point thinking, yeah, but not that one man, surely. And it's clearly not the way Jesus thinks, because he has come to save one man, Lazarus, in this story. So let's go to the start. I won't go back across to where that postscript with Caiaphas. I've done that. But just have that in your thoughts, if you like, or reflect on it later. So, John 11. Now, a certain man was ill. Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. Have you noticed how we're getting more and more information as we go? A certain man was ill. He lived in this place called Bethany. Why is Bethany important? Well, because there's this two sisters, Martha and Mary. And Mary, she's the one who anoints Jesus with oil and wipes her feet with his hair. And Lazarus is her brother. Not just a certain man living in Bethany, who happens to be friends with the significant sisters who love Jesus and who have done wonderful things for him. But actually, Lazarus is their brother. So you're getting this layer of, not just any guy. Oh my goodness, that guy. Wow. There's a real love here. So the sisters sent to him saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. Do you get the weight of the expectation that's on Jesus right now? And surely, knowing that he is a loving Lord, how much Would he want to do something about this? For this family, this significant family. But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. What's interesting about that sentence? Why are only two people of the three named? Who's missing? Mary. She becomes important to us. Leaving her name out signals something. Oh, why is she not there? We become more aware of Mary because she's not named. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Do you see what John is doing here? And so cleverly, we have this expectation. He will rush to Lazarus's aid. If not for the sake of Lazarus, certainly the sisters, who mean so much to him. Like, the love debt is enormous. Now, why doesn't he rush? It's given a reason. Well, this is not going to end in death. This is for the glory of God. So he's waiting for something to happen. There's also another reason in here, which we get to. So he stays 2 days longer. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." And the disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you were going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." In other words, well, I'm not dead yet, so let's keep going. I don't know why he didn't say that. After saying these things, he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to waken him." The disciples said, "Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he will recover." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there." Think about that. "So that you may believe. But let us go to him." So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Well, let us go, that we may die with him." Right? Why does he not go rushing? Why is there a tension? Why does John make such an effort to create this love debt expectation on Jesus? It's because if he goes back to Bethany, only 3 miles from Jerusalem, he risks his own life. Better, surely, that Lazarus die than Jesus die, surely? Wouldn't Caiaphas think that? Why risk your life, Jesus? You're the chosen one. You're the Lord. He's Lazarus. Men die. So what? Oh, well, he's going back. We might as well go and die with him. And that's the last we hear from the disciples. Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, around 3 kilometers. And many of the Jews, the same Jews, presumably at least some of them who tried to stone Jesus, so this is significant, had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So, when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him. But Mary remained in the house. What does he mean? So, when Martha heard he was coming, she met him. Well, Martha knows the history. Jesus, we asked him to come, but we know he's risking his life. And here are all these jolly Jews. Like these ones who want to kill him here. This could go really bad. So Martha, maintaining an awareness of what's going on, rushes off to meet Jesus before he gets to Bethany. Before the Jews see him and it turns to custard. To coin a phrase or use an old phrase. And I like custard. So maybe it's a better phrase to say, before it goes horribly wrong. She rushes off to meet Jesus outside of Bethany before these Jews who want his head see him.
That's says a lot about who she is and her character and the way that she is dealing with her grief. She has an awareness still of what's going on around her. She hasn't yet lost herself in the grief, if you like. And she has this exchange. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." That's belief, isn't it? They know what Jesus is capable of. But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. That's even deeper belief. I've seen you do many things. Presumably, there are many more things you could do because of your relationship with God. Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha said, "Well, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die." Do you believe this? I suggest it's not an easy thing to believe. Whoever believes in Jesus will never die. And those who have will see life again. It's a massive statement to make about one man, isn't it? Like one guy. Just believe in me. Like not anyone else. Me. And you'll never die. And those who have, I don't see, here's the funny thing. If you've already died, how do you believe in Jesus? We won't go there right now. She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that. I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into this world." When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, so right, remember, Jesus is here under a cloud of a death sentence. Martha knows this, has gone and met him privately, quietly outside of Bethany, to avoid these many Jews. And she goes to see her sister, and she takes her aside and privately says something to her, still aware of this risk that Jesus is taking and what she could do to minimize it. She says, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." When she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. These are professional mourners. Now, when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. This moment with Mary, I've reflected on a lot. Trying to understand what is going on for her, what is going on for Jesus. Why her response caused that response from him. To see these many grieving people, to see Mary grieving, that it would move him, that he would be deeply moved in his spirit, greatly troubled, and that he would even weep. What I've come to is thinking about the genius of Jesus in his pastoral care, which starts, funnily enough, with his decision not to come. His genius about what does he want for his loved ones starts with his decision not to rush to their aid. Now, that has some consequences. One of those consequences is very obvious. Martha and Mary both saying, well, if you had got here, he wouldn't have died. Your decision to wait, Jesus, has cost us a brother, and we are hurting. You have disappointed us. What does Jesus want when he says, I have waited, I restrain myself so that something will happen that will lead to you greatly believing? Like you believe something and some things, but you're not there yet. There's a layer to your belief that's missing. That this process I'm going to put you through and go through with you will start to touch on. In Romans 5, 4 and 5, it says, suffering produces endurance, which produces character, which produces hope. And I'm fairly sure that we can agree that they are suffering and that Jesus has made a clear decision to allow them to go through that. Not because he's unkind, but because he loves. Now, I'll tell a story. The book The Shack? Paul William Young or William Paul Young, one of those things. I heard him tell his testimony once, and just to select a little piece out of his story, before he wrote The Shack, he got into major financial trouble and was going into bankruptcy. His business was going to collapse. And he had three very wealthy friends who said they could have solved my problems with just one check and it wouldn't have hurt them. They could easily have done that. And he said, and they loved me enough to do that. But I said to them, don't bail me out. Don't bail me out. I'm going through this for a purpose. And if you stop the process, you stop my growth. Who among us would dare take that stand? Who among us would face a hardship and say, I know who can bail me out and I refuse you the right to do it? But he said, what I want you to do is, and this must have been hard for his three friends, I want you to join me in court as my life is torn to shreds. I want you to be with me, but I don't want you to rescue me. Suffering produces endurance, which produces character, which produces hope. For Mr. Young, it produced a book called The Shack. Because he, under the crucible of hardship, and lots more in his life that contributed to this, trying to hold down two jobs, barely making ends meet for the family, he begins to write his book. It's interesting, he tells the story that on Christmas, like maybe the night before Christmas Eve, a $100 bill was slipped under the door. And the way that money got there is itself extraordinary, but with that money, he was able to print off enough copies of The Shack as presents for his family. That's how it started. He didn't have enough money himself, but that $100 was enough to print it off. And what has The Shack done? Now, it might not be your cup of tea, but many people have been encouraged by it, have been helped by it. Many people are richer, have a taste of hope because of what he went through and what it produced. Now, is God good enough to want the very best in us, no matter what it might cost? Is he that good? Or is he like most of us in a pastoral care situation, who really only want to relieve someone's suffering so that we don't feel their pain? who rush to help someone because we can't bear the thought that we didn't do a good thing. Who would bear waiting if you could do something for someone, if you had the means and would not do it, but just sit beside someone suffering and say, I'm with you, I'm not rescuing you, but I'm with you, because suffering produces endurance. Endurance will produce character. And you know what? The very best thing of that, it produces hope. How much of our pastoral care ends up leaving people hopeless? What a bizarre idea. We rush too quickly to solve a problem. We were meeting a group of pastors in the northern area. We meet once a month, and the question was asked of us as ministers, what are you doing to practice God's faithfulness or trustworthiness? How do you practice that in your ministry? And one of them, he said, you know, many years ago when I was in another place ministering, we had a similar kind of group of pastors, and one of them came and visited me one day, and he said, you're doing your congregation a harm. And this is one of the most pastorally caring guys I know, and he said, what do you mean? He says, every time one of your flock hurts, you rush in and you try and fix it, and you're doing harm. You're making them weak. Leave them alone. They'll be in a different space in 2 weeks. And we talked about it and thought, is there a balance, you know? You don't need to abandon people into their suffering as if, well, we don't care. What would it look like to be able to do what Jesus did? Well, what did he do? He waited, and then what did he do? Why does he weep? Because he is standing, he waits for Mary to come to her. He waits for Mary, who he knows is grieving the most, who is feeling most the pain and the angst, the agony of this loss of her brother. Mary, the one, you know, if we know the character of Mary and Martha, we know Martha's the practical one, she gets things done, and Mary's the very sort of emotional or full-hearted one who sits at Jesus' feet in another gospel. And in this gospel, we hear that she even has this moment where she anoints Jesus' feet with oil and wipes it with her hair. What? But you know what? You know when that story comes? After this one. After this one. So John uses it to give us this idea of a love debt that Jesus has toward these sisters, and yet we discover when we look forward at a chapter, it hadn't even happened yet. That John's been super smart here, and he is getting us now to think, well, hang on a minute. Jesus didn't owe her anything for anointing his feet with oil. It hadn't even happened yet. No, but what engagement would it take to move Mary from deep, deep grief to this incredible outflowing of love? If she's feeling the pain more, she also is the one who expresses love more. Why is Mary's name missing in the list of the three early on? Mary's in the center of the story. It's not about Lazarus. You know, for Jesus, it's easy to raise a body from the grave. You know what God finds his greatest challenge? To move our hearts. His greatest challenge is to woo these stony, stubborn, hurt, angry, suffering hearts from bitterness to betterness. He struggles to move people from, well, I'm not going to trust you. You're not trustworthy. Who are you anyway? To, I will pour out a whole year's worth of money on one extravagant act on your feet. Moving us from suffering, Lord, how dare you, to no, this is a purpose here. This is going to build in me endurance, which will develop in me character, and that will give me hope. That sounds like a really good thing. But we find it hard. Our stony hearts, our Caiaphas hearts, which would rather say, this person's causing angst in the community, can we get rid of that person rather than me deal with my angst? this person has hurt us. Can we get rid of them rather than ask, well, have they actually hurt us or are they hurting? If I'm hurting, do I blame them for it or do I work through my own massive buttons that they'd probably pressed and are my own issues? Is scapegoating the thing that we should do? No. So Jesus, he stands waiting for Mary. Why does he weep? Here's my reason. Here's my take on it. And you can take your own. Not only is he suffering and allowing himself to feel her pain and sit with her in that, recognizing what he has done to contribute to this, he asks, take me to him. Who replies? Not her. She's given up. She rushed to his feet to accuse him. What does he do? Does he blame her? Does he accuse her back? Imagine this scene. We're at the tomb. He didn't bother asking for Mary. He said to Martha, look, I know there are Jews in Bethany. This is going to be awkward. Why don't you and me just go to the... I'm here to raise Lazarus, right? If you're here to raise Lazarus, go to the tomb. Martha knows where he is, and we'll just do it ourselves. Isn't that what he's here for, to raise Lazarus? Well, he doesn't need Mary for that. He doesn't hardly need anyone else, except maybe to move the stone that's in front of the tomb. But he doesn't. He needs Mary in the situation. Or he could have done what he has done in other situations. Come on, people. Why do you run to me with every little problem that you have? Isn't your faith great enough to have healed him? Couldn't you call on God? And then he calls out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And Lazarus comes out and everyone goes, wow. And he turns around and says, come on. Like, when are you going to believe? Haven't I done everything so far to prove to you I've got the power for this? And still you won't believe? Like, he could have scolded them, couldn't he? He could have taken them to task. But he doesn't. Because that wouldn't have healed Mary's heart. It's one thing to raise Lazarus, and that's easy, but he is trying to raise a broken heart, and that's hard. That takes taking it on in rapport and sympathy, and I'm going to feel some of this with you. I'm not going to run away from this. I'm not going to escape it. You're hurting. I get it. But this is necessary. You accuse me. I get it. I'm not going to accuse you back. It's unfair how you're treating me. Do you think it's fair they're treating Jesus this way? All that he has done for them? That he should give them special favor and raise their brother? Why not rush around the country raising everyone's brother? But he doesn't. He says nothing really. He just weeps. He weeps at the hurt, I think, that he feels in the relationship that's been broken. And then, to wrap this up, some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man? Oh, no. So the Jews said, see how he loved him. He's weeping. See how he loved him. He's weeping for Lazarus. And others said, well, he can open a blind man's eyes. He could have healed this guy. So kind of a mixed bag, right? Wow, he loved him. Well, if he loved him, he would have saved him. Then Jesus deeply moved again. And I reckon that's to do with that. That's to do with that lack of belief still, that man, what do I need to do? How often do I need to put my neck on the line for you? How often do I need to stand confronting these religious leaders who would easily and callously throw you into the rubbish tip because you are not good for the community in their eyes? How many times have I confronted them at my own cost? That I have a death sentence on my head and I'm still here and still you question my integrity, my value, my goodness. He comes to the tomb. It was a cave and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, by this time, there will be an odor. He has been dead 4 days. Lord, your plan stinks. Jesus said to her, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? Isn't that fascinating? She said she believed. Until it came to do something about it. So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me." No one else seems to. "I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." The previous chapter, Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. The sheep know my voice." And often we talk about that in the sense of people hearing him, following him, wanting to go wherever he takes them, whether to be the mission field, welcome back, Buchanan's, or wherever, or to do anything. But you know, this story really, really nails it home. Here is one of his flock, beyond normal hearing, but the good shepherd calls him out and he comes. If we ever begin to doubt and worry, remember, there will come a time he will call you and you will come. No matter where you are, no matter what you're going through, he can call you. And if you're his sheep, you will come. You will. And if you've been through hard times and you've experienced his goodness and his faithfulness, so that you have endured, developed character, you will have a hope, because he will meet you. If you don't rush off to your friend or your neighbor or to your bank account or to your insurance policy, if you don't rush seeking to save yourself or be saved from your suffering, if you come to Jesus instead, he will meet you and he will sympathize with you. He will bear that with you, and he will call you out of it. How do we know? Well, I think the story tells it brilliantly. And what happens very next scene? This brokenhearted, nearing on bitter and angry sister, betrayed by the Lord she loves, takes a bottle of priceless perfume and pours it on his feet and wipes it with her hair. That's what Jesus can do if we let him. Yeah, there should be a chapter in my book, maybe. Would anyone like to make comment?
It's particularly hard you can help, and you have a reason as to why you shouldn't help, but then you start to doubt your good intention, you know. Is it just because it's easier not to help? Trust, we are right. As much. Well, that seems quite hard. Put it that way.
Yeah. 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 Thanks, Marshall. Next week, in a sense, I think these stories tell give a profound and beautiful insight into how we care for one another within the kingdom of God. This story tells a part of that story. How Jesus can take us through with an incredibly soft and loving heart through hardship for good purpose, but also a way in which we can respond to him and also to others. And Mary's example and what she does for Jesus. And I'll talk about that next week, but yeah, we'll perhaps just leave it there unless anyone really does have a burning need to make a comment. No. Okay.